Today, beware base effects. The DFA Daily to the 20th of May 2021. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, it was a pretty volatile night on the exchanges in the US. And though the markets here are a little more positive, there are still a bunch of questions we need to consider. Over there, stocks booked a third day of losses after the release of Fed meeting minutes showed debate emerging within the central bank over whether rising inflation will be more than transitory as the central bank keeps monetary policy accommodative in the wake of the pandemic. The S&P 500 fell 0.81%, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 0.49%, and the Nasdaq Composite slipped 0.49%. And the minutes also showed some members of the rate-setting Federal Open Market Committee were open in April to the possibility of starting discussions around when to taper the Fed's near $120 billion a month asset purchases, particularly if the economy continues to make rapid progress as COVID-19 cases decline and more of the US population gets vaccinated. Back in late April, the FOMC voted unanimously to maintain accommodative policies aimed at holding down short-term borrowing costs between 0 and 0.25%, while maintaining its pace of monthly asset purchases. And Fed Chairman Jerome Powell at the time described the economic recovery from the COVID pandemic as uneven and incomplete, but pricing pressures have intensified since then, with Atlanta Fed President Raphael Bostic on Wednesday saying he remains open to, quote, every scenario as it relates the outlook for the economy in the recovery phase from the COVID pandemic. The St. Louis Fed President James Bullard also told reporters on Wednesday that the Fed has sketched out a plan for inflation to likely run above 2% this year and next, but will remain nimble in its response. Inflation is a dog that has not barked in the night for a long time, said John Carey, director of equity income at Amundi US, after the Fed minutes. But he also said the old dog appears at least to be making noise again. We'll see, he said. But I fear the Fed is getting too complacent about inflation because it can get out of control quickly and get ugly. Bob Miller, BlackRock's head of America's fundamental fixed income, said he thinks the economic reopening is creating supply-side frictions that should abate as labour supply improves and supply chains respond, but that it may take a couple of quarters to achieve. The divergent views underscore the struggle participants have with the concept of transitory inflation pressures as described by a number of Fed officials. Our view remains that tapering will be discussed around August and September this year, with a formal announcement in December that tapering will commence in the first quarter of 2022, wrote analysts at UniCredit. Investors also focused on a new ECB report warning about potential abrupt asset price corrections after the recent rally in financial assets. You have a third central bank come out and question valuation, said Larry Adam, chief investment officer at Raymond James, pointing to recent comments by the Fed and the ECB on potentially sharp asset price declines following significant rallies, as well as remarks from the Bank of China about unreasonable increases in commodity prices. When you start to combine that, Adam said, investors have responded by saying, let's focus on fundamentals, particularly when it comes to high growth technology companies that have yet to turn a profit. Because some Federal Reserve officials were open to a debate at upcoming meetings on scaling back their massive bond purchases, a record of their April gathering showed potentially putting taper talks on the table, perhaps as early as next month. A number of participants suggested that if the economy continued to make rapid progress toward the committee's goals, it might be appropriate at some point in upcoming meetings to begin discussing a plan for adjusting the pace of asset purchases according to those minutes. Various participants noted that it would likely be some time until the economy had made substantial further progress toward the committee's maximum employment and price stability goals, the minutes said. Officials held interest rates near zero, of course, at the meeting and pledged to continue buying $80 billion in treasuries and $40 billion in mortgage-backed securities every month until substantial further progress has been made on their employment and inflation goals. The Fed, of course, next meets in June. The US Treasuries declined on heavy futures volumes after the minutes were published, as investors digested the news that there was a group of officials open to talking about tapering bond buying. And US stocks declined, as we said earlier. Chair Jerome Powell said in a press conference following the April meeting that it was premature to start talking about tapering the asset purchases. It was surprising insofar as Powell, after the meeting, in the press conference, said it wasn't time to talk about tapering. And they were talking about tapering, said Michael Feroli, JP Morgan Chase chief US economist. Even with the April payroll disappointment, you could kind of start taking some baby steps in that conversation at the June FOMC meeting. The US labour market posted strong gains in March, the most recent month for which Fed officials had data at the April meeting. Policymakers have since said they'd need to see continued strength to indicate that the economy was on its way to meeting the Fed's test to scale back bond buying. Fed officials reiterated that they need to see progress in actual data and not just forecasts in order for the recovery to meet that test, according to the minutes. And while a number of them noted that the economy was making rapid progress toward the central bank's goals, that was before a disappointing April jobs report that also revised down the March figures. Now, the meeting minutes didn't specify which or exactly how many participants favoured starting tapering talks at upcoming meetings. Some of the officials that have spoken publicly about this following the April meeting are not voters this year, including Dallas Fed President Robert Kaplan, who this month was calling publicly for a conversation on tapering sooner rather than later. But other officials, including Fed Vice Chair Richard Clarida and Governor Lyle Brainard, have said that the economy continues to need support. The Fed's massive asset purchase program is designed to support the economy through the pandemic by lowering borrowing costs on everything from auto loans to houses. And while there are signs the recovery is still uneven, some officials have argued that a hot property market is reason enough for the central bank to consider curbing its purchases of mortgage-backed securities. Both Kaplan and Boston Fed President Eric Rosengren have publicly argued that housing no longer needs Fed support. There was no discussion of reducing the Fed's mortgage-backed security purchases in the April minutes, though. And fears of higher inflation have unsettled some investors in recent weeks amid rising commodity prices, while Fed critics argue that its ultra-easy policies combined with massive US fiscal stimulus risk overheating the economy. In their comments about inflation, Fed officials said that a jump in demand along with some bottlenecks in supply would likely push inflation measures above 2% in the near term. The minutes said a number of participants said some supply shortages may not be resolved quickly, and if so, these factors could put upward pressure on prices beyond this year. Still, many observed that longer-run inflation expectations remained anchored near the committee's goal. Despite the expected short-run fluctuations in measured inflation, many participants commented that various measures of longer-term inflation expectations remained well anchored at levels broadly consistent with achieving the committee's longer-run goals, the minutes said. Prices of goods surged in April, with the consumer price index posting its biggest month-over-month gain since 2009, supply chain bottlenecks and increased economic activity as vaccination rates climb are contributing to the price spikes, which Fed officials have said will be transitory and temporary. Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester noted earlier this month that measures of trend inflation, including her bank's median CPI gauge at 2.1% in April, are still in check. For inflation, it's hard because it's a messy picture right now, said Carl Tennenbaum, chief economist at Northern Trust. They are really flying through the clouds right now, so it's hard to make judgments about underlying prices. Tennenbaum doesn't think the FOMC will begin discussing tapering until the fall, after the Fed officials see several months of jobs data, including improvements in the employment of minorities and the additional unemployment benefit expire in September. The black unemployment rate rose in April to 9.7% and the overall rate ticked up to 6.1%. And talking of fog, the Consumer Prices Index in the UK, including owner-occupiers' housing costs, the CPIH, rose by 1.6% in the 12 months to April 2021, up from 1% in March. The largest upward contribution to the CPIH 12-month inflation rate came from housing and household services, 0.57 percentage points, and transport, 0.56 percentage points. On a monthly basis, the CPIH rose by 0.7% in April, following a 0.2% increase in March. Rising household utility, clothing, and motor fuel prices made the largest upward contributions to CPIH growth in April. These were partially offset by a large downward contribution from recreation and culture. And the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, rose by 1.5% in the 12 months to April, up from 0.7% in March. On a monthly basis, it rose by 0.6% in April, following a 0.3% increase in March. As a result of the easing of coronavirus restrictions, the number of CPIH items identified as unavailable in April fell to 28, accounting for just 3.1% of the basket by weight. And so they collected a weighted total of 77.2% of comparable coverage, which was collected before the first lockdown, which of course excludes unavailable items. The Consumer Price Index, including owner-occupiers' housing, CPIH, rose 1.6% in the 12 months to April 21, up from 1% in March, and price movements for household utilities, clothing and motor fuels are the main reasons for the higher monthly rate this year compared with a year back. But in the UK's Office for National Statistics blog, they posted "Beware base effects." They said the sharp rise in consumer price inflation revealed in the latest monthly data has inevitably prompted speculation about what's to come. To fully understand the new figures, however, it's important to remember that we have just passed the first anniversary of the pandemic. The statistical effect of that landmark needs to unravel before the real path of inflation and other economic statistics become clear. The standard advice given when looking at monthly statistics is not to focus too much on the short-term changes, which are often volatile, but rather on the longer-term trends, such as the 12-month growth rate. That usually works quite well as a rough rule of thumb, but there can be exceptions. Now, they said, is such an exception. The reason is that just over a year ago, we saw some dramatic short-term movements in many of our headline economic statistics. In April 2020 alone, we saw retail sales down 18.1%, goods exports fell 20.6%, and monthly GDP dropped a record 18.7%. It was an extraordinary time when these short-term movements were very much the focus of everyone's attention, and rightly so. As the UK economy starts to recover, those dramatic declines from a year ago will leave their echo in the latest numbers as they become the starting point for calculating 12-month growth rates. This phenomenon, the impact of the corresponding base or period of the previous year on current growth estimates, is known as the base effect. As a result, many of our headline economic statistics are likely to report double-digit 12-month percentage growth in coming months, not so much because they are booming, but because the comparison will be with an historically low base period from a year ago.
For example, even if monthly GDP levels were flat in coming months, 12-month growth would jump to nearly 25% in April 2021 and continue to show double-digit growth until at least July. Yet the UK economy, under this hypothetical example, would remain well below pre-pandemic levels. It would clearly be misleading to use such large and distorted annual growth rates as an indicator of the health of the UK economy. So what should people focus on instead? Well, one approach would be to compare current activity levels with February 2020 before the coronavirus pandemic and recession hit. Another is to look at movements over recent months and to compare the latest 3 months with the previous quarter. For consumer prices, the picture is a little more complicated as the 12-month growth is the headline inflation number. And spring 2020 saw crude oil prices fall to a 21-year low. At first, this impacted producer prices, but it quickly fed through to lower petrol and diesel prices. Average petrol prices fell by 10.4 pence per litre between March and April 2020, the largest monthly fall since the current series began in 1990. As those negative contributions from last year's falls and drop out of the 12-month growth rate and are replaced by positive contributions from higher prices, this base effect can be expected to place upward pressure on headline inflation for the next few months. For example, in April 2020, fuels and lubricants contributed minus 0.3 percentage points to the CPIH 12-month rate change, while in April 2021 they added plus 0.28 points. Their combined effect was to add 0.58 percentage points to the latest annual inflation rate. These distortions will wash out of the annual figures in a few months' time, but in the meantime, users of official statistics should beware base effects. And talking of base effects, back in Australia, the seasonally adjusted wage price index, the WPI, rose 0.6% in the March quarter 21, with the annual growth rate at 1.5%, according to the ABS. They said after two quarters of minimal growth, wages rose 0.6% for the second successive quarter. This quarter saw a return to regular patterns of wage growth for the time of year, supplemented to some extent by pay rises for the final group of award workers scheduled in the Fair Work Commission's annual wage review 2019-20. March quarter 2021's moderate growth was influenced by regularly scheduled increases. Improved business conditions saw employers revisit wage reviews postponed during the height of the pandemic, and the phased approach to the delivery of award increases saw jobs in the accommodation and food services, retail trade, arts and recreation, aviation and tourism industries receive rises previously recorded in September quarters. The public sector recorded its lowest annual growth rate at 1.5% since the commencement of the series, while the private sector remained at 1.4% for the second quarter in a row. Wage increase deferrals and smaller increases had an impact on public sector wage growth. In original terms, annual wage growth to the March quarter 21 range from 0.4% for rental, hiring and real estate services to 2.2% for the education and training industry, but again, beware the base effects. Across the country, Tasmania recorded the highest quarterly rate, up 0.8%, and annual rate up 2%, while the ACT recorded the lowest annual growth rate at 1.3%, based mainly on the slowing rate of public sector wage growth. The WPI measures the change in hourly wages and salaries paid. Wage subsidies like JobKeeper and payroll tax changes fall outside the conceptual scope of the survey. So again, beware the base issue. And also today, the seasonally adjusted unemployment rate fell by 0.2 percentage points to 5.5% between March and April 21, according to the ABS. They said this was the sixth consecutive fall in the unemployment rate, down from 6.9% in October 2020. Now, Australia's unemployment rate has fallen despite more than 30,000 people losing work immediately after the JobKeeper wage subsidy wrapped up. The official ABS employment figures show a fall of 30,600 people in employment in April, which is the first month of figures following JobKeeper's end in late March. However, the unemployment rate continued to edge lower from 5.7 to 5.5 on a big fall in the number of people looking for work. The participation rate dropped from a record high at 66.3% to 66% in April. The softer outcome this month was largely, they said, a function of the Easter holiday, which occurred during the survey reference period. As was the case in January, seasonality has distorted the survey, and so we are really unable to ascertain a clear read on the impact of the conclusion of JobKeeper. Maybe we'll get a better read next month. Despite the timing of the sudden swing from strong job creation to job losses, the ABS said the end of JobKeeper did not have a discernible impact on employment between March and April. We have not seen large changes in the indicators, they said, that would suggest a clear JobKeeper impact, such as an increase in people working reduced or zero hours for economic reasons or because they were leaving their job. Some of the 31,000 fall in employment may relate to the end of JobKeeper, but it could also reflect usual month-to-month variations in the labour market, some larger than usual seasonal changes, similar to those we saw early in the year. Now, of course, the Easter holidays were a major factor behind an unusually large 0.7% drop in hours worked. Sarah Hunter from BIS Oxford Economics said the figures show the easy wins from reopening the economy and the resultant rebound in activity have largely been exhausted. Looking ahead, the data is likely to become patchier and more normal month to month, she predicted. The May release may show more evidence of the end of JobKeeper and the ability of workers to move from sectors with relatively weak demand to sectors which are booming will become an increasingly important factor in further increases in employment. It's worth noting the youth unemployment rate fell to its lowest level since the global financial crisis, reflecting a strong increase in employment for young men, following a number of increases for young women in recent months. Like we saw in January, the number of people taking leave over the Easter public and school holidays are also higher than in the past. The 31,000 or 0.2% fall in employment was due to a decline in female employment, down by 0.6%, while male employment increased by 0.1% and female hours fell by 1.6%, while male hours remained steady. The falls in both employment and unemployment in April saw the participation rate decrease 0.3 percentage points to 66%, back to around its pre-pandemic levels, and the female participation rate decreased 0.5 percentage point to 61.3%, and the male participation rate decreased 0.1 percentage points to 70.8%. Underemployment decreased 0.2 percentage points to 7.8% in April, 1 percentage point below its pre-pandemic level at 8.8%. The underutilization rate, which combines unemployment and underemployment, decreased by 0.4 percentage points to 13.3%. That was 6.8 percentage points below its peak in April 2020 and 0.8 percentage points below the start of the pandemic, reflecting the continued fall in underemployment. And next, a sharp sell-off in crypto assets also have attracted attention. Bitcoin traded below 40,000 on Wednesday, recovering a chunk of early losses from dipping to a low around 30,000 US. Market strategists said the downturn in crypto also may reflect weakened bullish sentiment for speculative assets. Regulators aren't worried about a possible crash in digital currencies dragging down the rest of the financial system or the economy, though. The European Central Bank on Wednesday said that the risks of cryptocurrencies affecting the financial system stability looks, quote, limited at present. In large part, that's because they're still not widely used for payments, and institutions under their purview still have little exposure to crypto-linked instruments. Earlier this week, the US Federal Reserve said a survey of market contacts found roughly one in five cited cryptocurrencies as a potential shock to the system over the next 12 to 18 months. That's a turnaround from last year. when a similar survey found none mentioning cryptocurrencies. And finally, Choice released a media statement today citing DFA research. Western Sydney and Western Melbourne hotspots for mortgage stress. Choice says time for the government to drop its plan to axe safe lending laws. Consumer group Choice has released postcode data showing significant parts of Western Sydney and Melbourne's West are already in mortgage stress as the federal government vows to remove vital protections. The data comes as One Nation has publicly rejected the government's plans to repeal safe lending laws. The 10 crisis suburbs for New South Wales and Victoria represent over 130,000 households on the brink. The top 10 suburbs nationally for mortgage stress cover urban and regional parts of New South Wales, Victoria, Queensland and Western Australia, based on data provided by DFA. These are households where from fortnight to fortnight people are spending more than they're earning. That means that they have to make difficult choices like whether to put food on the table or keep up with repayments. If they can't maintain the juggling act, they risk losing their homes, said Choice CEO Alan Kirkland. Safe lending laws were put in place to avoid the huge damage to families and communities caused by mortgage stress by making banks take care to avoid giving people loans they weren't able to afford to repay. If the government gets away with its plan to axe safe lending laws, people who are desperate to get into a rising housing market will be at risk of overexposure, and people who need to refinance won't be adequately protected. We're glad to see more and more senators, more recently Senator Hanson, stand up to the banks and the government. Many people are still doing it tough and need laws that protect them from the bad bank behaviour that led to the Banking Royal Commission, said Mr. Kirkland. The repeal of safe lending laws has spectacularly stalled in the Federal Senate. The legislation originally scheduled for December 2020 has repeatedly failed to progress. The repeal is now in limbo, with a growing number of senators confirming they will vote to block the government's changes. Crossbench Senator Pauline Hanson has yesterday publicly rejected the repeal. We call upon the government to ditch its irresponsible plan. Now is not the time to give more power to the bank, said Mr. Kirkland. Over 39,000 Australians and 125 organisations have signed an open letter calling on parliamentarians to save safer lending, said Choice. So standing back, we continue to tussle with inflation and deflation and whether any of the metrics that we're seeing are true and reasonable. But for me, the base effect issue is real, and that's why I'm still not as convinced about the future trajectory of inflation as many others are. And the responsible lending legislation absolutely should not be repealed. It's a critical part of protection that consumers need in Australia, particularly given the ever larger loans and the weakening lending standards that we're seeing at the moment. That's why mortgage stress is likely to continue to rise. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.